to Life show. My name's Robin Daly, and I'm the founder of the UK charity Yes to Life, and your host for this show. The show is about integrative medicine for cancer. In it, I talk to people who either have landed in this arena and are finding their way through unfamiliar territory, or those who are here by choice, working as scientists, practitioners, doctors, to provide help. Patricia Pete is the founder and director of Cancer Options, a consultancy that's based in the Midlands and London and offers a unique service to people with cancer. Unique sounds like one of those overused words, but in this case, I think it's true. Certainly for the UK, but probably also much further afield. I've certainly not come across anything quite as comprehensive in the last decade of working with Yes to Life. And speaking of Yes to Life, we have worked closely with Cancer Options since the inception of our helpline, so as to be able to offer callers access to personalised information regarding their treatment choices from right across the spectrum of integrative medicine, everything from mainstream methods to alternatives. In this week's show, I'm talking to Patricia over Skype with a view to finding out what she sees as the most promising developments in integrative oncology, what seems to be working, and who it's working for. Morning, Patricia, and thanks a lot for coming on the show.
You're very welcome.
So, in the field that we work in, there's always the new kid on the block in terms of approaches to cancer, and sadly, all too many of those are seriously overhyped at the outset, often for commercial reasons, more than for their potential to help. It's kind of a direct parallel in the integrative world to the media fanfare that new drugs get. The general pattern seems to be that most of them settle down to have some uses for some people sometimes. Even looking through the eyes that are kind of accustomed to seeing this pattern, there seems to me to be some quite exciting news around, some new developments. I'm just interested to hear how it looks from where you stand.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Robin. You do get the comparative element of, and this is the negative thing that happens in complementary medicine, is somebody can come up with something and massively overhype it on the internet, generating an awful lot of interest and optimism and hope, and usually money from people in terms of getting into something. Rightly, things do settle down, and it's because of the, you know, always the thing with integrative programs, as we get thrown at us, it's a lack of research, a lack of evidence that comes through, because nobody can actually afford to do a randomized double-blind trial apart from a drug company. That's financially impossible for anyone to achieve that. So the only true evidence you get, unfortunately, is with time.
Right.
And actually seeing something play out in time. And you either get things that creep along slowly and come into consciousness, like low-dose naltrexone, etc., or you get something that came in like the GC-MAF did that was majorly hyped and massive claims for it without the substance to behind it. So there's such a lot to look at, to be honest. I mean, on one hand, you've always got the kind of the most basic elements, which are you put into an integrative program. And on the other hand, what we have in England is such a minor element compared to what's available in Europe and is becoming available around the world. It almost seems a little unfair to talk about them, to be honest, because, you know, what's being achieved elsewhere is so much greater than what we can do here, and everybody's so very restricted. On the one hand, we're getting a lot more evidence for our cheap, simple, basic approaches, and they are altogether making sense. And on the other hand, you've got places, for example, like the Hao Wang Clinic, like the RGCC with their chemosensitivity testing, the big high science element of integrative medicine that is bringing in some amazing science, giving us a lot more knowledge. And for example, with a new approach at the Hao Wang Clinic where they're identifying different receptors for glioblastoma patients, their studies show now a median survival of 50 months. Right. On average, which is astonishing.
Much higher than usual.
Yeah, yes. So there's the tremendous amount coming on there. Unfortunately, as is always the case, that kind of stuff, that kind of work in Europe is at the high end of the financial spectrum.
Exactly, yeah.
And, you know, which is a tremendous shame. But, you know, that's the thing is they're getting the evidence faster. You know, we're never going to produce the evidence for the cheaper, simpler methods because it's always about putting the whole program together.
Yes.
You know.
Okay, so just to go back, you use that phrase cheap, simple, basic treatments. Can you just outline what you're talking about?
Well, when you're looking at cancer generally, and it's different, it's, you know, it's so different for so many different types of cancer. In terms of, there's two things really: how cancer behaves metabolically, and how then that individual person's cancer behaves in terms of how quickly it's mutating, how dangerous it is, or indeed how indolent it is. So working out how someone can, what part that they can actually play in that. But I think you can safely generalize for anybody that the main elements that they need to be looking at, obviously nutrition, there's several different approaches that can be reasonably considered. Anti-inflammatory is always massively important because inflammation drives cancer cells, and also where the body's normal cells, the immune system, is trying to deal with the cancer cells, the inflammation actually scrambles the signals. So it enables the cancer cells and disables the immune system. So there was actually a recent article done by an oncologist or a scientist, I can't remember which. The same thing I've been banging on about for years is, why don't we have an anti-inflammatory element as part of an oncology program? It makes perfect sense.
It does.
Not only will it enable chemo to work better, you'll recover. The cells will recover better and the body will take part. So you need an anti-inflammatory element, and that includes oxygenation, because oxygenation is very anti-inflammatory and very, very alkalizing. What's becoming increasingly interesting is the amount of work that's being done on chelation and cancer. And chelation is simply putting, when you chelate, you put a substance into the body which removes heavy metals and takes out excess metals.
So detox.
No, chelation is different to detox.
Okay.
It is part of a detoxification system, but it has to be viewed separately. Okay. And cells can become malignant. They can form a tumor. They're not necessarily that dangerous. That's not necessarily even particularly important. We'll probably, you know, everybody will develop some at some point. It's when it develops this independent blood supply, it is very becomes very dangerous, and that's when it can spread, not through the lymph, because it doesn't need a blood supply in the lymph, but when the first step on the road of angiogenesis, getting that blood supply, is the utilization of copper by the cells. And when you chelate, cancer cells have more copper than normal cells. They also have more iron, which is where artemisinin works. And when you chelate, you remove the copper. Normal body cells can function perfectly normally with a low level of copper. And when you remove the copper, you remove the potential for angiogenesis. So the tumor is less likely to be able to grow. It's more likely to die off. It's more vulnerable then to attack from other things. And interestingly, in America, they've done a lot of studies, and they're using over there a compound or a drug called tetrathiodine bolibate. And there's a lot of studies been done on this, and the forums over there are all buzzing. Women who get triple negative breast cancer, it's a very, very aggressive cancer. It goes off like a forest fire in the body. And when it does, its angiogenic ability is phenomenal. This is what you get with your fast-growing cancers. It's all about the angiogenesis. Melanoma can pop up all over the place. Triple negative does, several others. And when you chelate, you massively, massively reduce the ability of the cancer cells to do that.
Interesting.
And they've got people with triple negative going into full remission, surviving many, many years longer than over here.
Mm. And that fits the description of being a cheap, simple, basic treatment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, chelation is not something that's a difficult or necessarily expensive thing to do. It can be done, you know, either orally or intravenously, and you can you can check to see if you have potential for high angiogenesis. The blood analysis type of side of things is coming to help us along quite significantly now. And you can get things like VEGF levels tested, which is vascular endothelial growth factor, that will tell you if you've got a high angiogenic ability, you know. So there's a lot more. We should perhaps talk about the testing side a little bit as well, actually, separately,
yeah.
Because
okay.
There's a lot, we're getting a lot more information and help now. It's not just a case of these seem like a good idea, try them and off you go.
Hmm.
And let's cross our fingers and hope.
Right.
We've got a lot more ways of checking in to see how it's going.
See if they're relevant and whether they're working. Okay, well, that's great. So these cheap, simple, basic approaches, these are all the kind of things you're saying that people in this country can access. They can either do them themselves under supervision, or they can go somewhere and have these from a doctor or a clinic here. They're likely to have to go abroad for anything more sophisticated than that. And you're actually helping quite a few people to go to the continent, yeah?
Yeah. It is unfortunate. There's a lot more going off on the continent on the higher end of stuff. But I have to say, to put that into perspective as
yes.
well, to me, it's all, you know, getting over cancer takes a long time. It can take a while to get it under control. It can take a while to get everything calmed down and to get things normalised. And, you know, as good as clinics often sound in Europe, going anywhere and working for about 3 or 4 weeks, there's a great limit to what you can achieve in 3 or 4 weeks.
Sure.
And, you know, I'm not necessarily, you know, I think the right circumstances and the right probably financial situation is fine. But I'm not necessarily keen on that, because I think it can be a false thing that you can actually achieve quite a lot in 3 or 4 weeks. But then if the budget's blown and that's gone, you know. So most people's circumstances, what they can do on an ongoing basis daily at home, and you know, what they can do within their own lifestyle, is actually in the longer term brings more to the table.
Right. So the European clinics, though, would have more to offer to somebody who is in a more urgent situation, had something more critical to be dealt with, maybe in the short term, to turn it around.
It's all to do with timing. It really is momentum. You know, I often use the analogy, it becomes like a game of chess. And it's just analyzing, you know, how much time have you got to do this? And it's always the balance between getting the underlying elements sorted out as well as keeping the cancer under control.
Hmm.
And this, you know, orthodox medicine is very good at bashing cancer cells on the head.
Right.
It's very good at, you know, giving cancer cells a real good bash. It doesn't support people properly, and it doesn't repair them, is its great weakness. It doesn't look at why would the cancer not come back?
Hmm.
Why would you not get Groundhog Day? And obviously for some people, you know, they have some great success with, you know, certainly with testicular cancer, with the lymphomas, with the leukemias, that's terrific. But for anything that's metastatic or aggressive in its early stage, the bashing on the head with chemo radiotherapy only takes you so far.
Right.
And indeed targeted therapies, they're going to run out of steam. And this is where integration works so well. We can, you know, people can utilize that where necessary, but go on to something a lot more positive afterwards.
Right. So in a way, this is something I've been talking to various people about. In my experience, I see that, you've described some of the shortcomings of the orthodox approach, if you like, and its strengths. It's got its strengths, it's got its shortcomings. On the other side, quite often, alternative medicine, if you like, you actually left orthodox medicine out of the picture altogether, is also, it's short of a trick, in as much as that for more critical situations, it often seems to me it doesn't have enough to turn a situation around, that sometimes you need to knock some cancer cells on the head simply to get on top of the situation. Would that be a fair description?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you'll always hear of people who've just done natural medicine, or, you know, done it naturally and been extremely successful, and these stories get on the internet, and they're very, very, and sometimes almost sounds so simple.
Right.
And sometimes the way some of the cancer stuff treatments, for a better word, or portrayed, is that it's all very simple and quite easy, and, you know, it's just being ignored. And I think that can be deceptive, it can be dangerous. And the first thing really is if somebody wants to do that, and I do talk to people who do want to do that and are really, you know, not going to consider orthodox medicine, and that's fine, I'll support people in whatever they do. But I think, first of all, they need to know how dangerous their situation is, or indeed not. And if someone's got, you know, an early stage prostate cancer, you know, fantastic, or breast cancer or something like that. The one area that seems to bring a lot to the table is surgery, you know, because the primary tumor can act like a control center. Cancer cells, it's all about looking at the cells and what they're doing and how quickly they're mutating. And actually, you know, people who don't want to have a biopsy or don't want surgery, you actually do get quite a lot of information from that. There was a recently very big study on biopsies. Do they encourage cancer to spread?
Right.
And massive piece of research that over many years came up with, whether it's true or not, there's no evidence to support that it did. But it's all about knowledge. And one of the things that biopsies can show you is size of tumour is relatively irrelevant. Size of tumour really matters. I mean, a hormonal breast tumour will go from zero to big in no time at all. There'll be about 10% cancer cells in there. It's all inflammation.
Okay.
It's what those cells are doing and how much they're evolving that actually matters. And cancer cells are a bit like kids. They start off very young and immature and very dependent. They can't survive away from home for about, if it's kids, about 40, 50 years nowadays, isn't it? But they can't go out and survive by themselves. They have to evolve to develop that ability. And that's part of what the primary tumour is doing, is the cells are, you've always got to bear in mind, cells are designed to evolve. They will always be trying to. And while they're doing that, the cancer, you know, a primary tumour can be altering things in the body to make the environment suitable
okay.
for the cancer cells to go and thrive. So I personally am always in favour of surgery if at all possible. And then and then work on the other things afterwards.
Hmm. That's interesting. Well, that's something that you know, I've come across different thoughts about in my time, and this idea that the primary is a sort of control center certainly seems to be something that's quite a common thread. But there's another question about it, as to whether there's a difference between surgery, actually removing the control center, and treating the control center in place, as to the message it gives out to the rest of the body, the rest of the cancer, if you like, in the body. I've heard it said from different sources, using completely different methods, that actually treating it in place sends out a message to sort of pull back to base camp, you know, that it actually affects the secondaries wherever they are. So is that anything you've come across, or is it matched your experience?
I've come across it anecdotally. I've not come across anything scientifically to back that up. But,
right.
I mean, realistically, we are, you know, most of us have probably have tumours we've never know about. So
right.
That process is probably taking place all the time. The trouble is, if you do discover a tumour, and, I mean, let's, you know, for most people, a tumour's got to be relatively developed before it's even findable.
Hmm.
You know, this is not the early stuff. You don't know.
No.
And, you know, I can never advise people on, yes, it's safe to not do anything or leave it in place. You know, you know, they have to make that decision themselves. I never know the answer to that.
No.
That's part of a gamble. Hopefully more analysis. You know, the thing that is going to develop on the orthodox side a hell of a lot over the next few years, 5 to 10 years in particular, is the analysis, is the information that you get. And without having to, perhaps having to be invasive, without having to use biopsies. So I think in about 10 years' time, we're going to be in a much better place to be able to sort of say, okay, this is what's going on. You know, this is your safety zone for dealing with this or not. Or, you know, if you've got a rapidly mutating cells inside a tumour and they've developed, you know, you can tell they've developed their ability to infiltrate the lymph system or the bloodstream, you perhaps need to consider doing something more invasive, more seriously. It's a messy world at the moment, unfortunately.
Mm.
And that's the problem. You know, people would like to think it's more black and white than it is, and it's not.
Right.
And that's the same in the orthodox world as well. No doctor can tell you whether it's safe or not to do anything without taking the tumour out and having a look at it
right.
at this moment in time.
Interesting. So you're yeah, I see that. And of course, testing has moved on a lot just in the recent years, hasn't it? In terms of what you can measure already, it's moved on a lot, and that does enable much better choices of treatment, much more accurate choice of treatment. It enables you to get away from a kind of blanket approach of, you know, carpet bombing the thing with as many things as you can think of. You can actually be a lot more selective, and then you can also check and test as you go along as to how they're actually working as well, which was very difficult a few years ago, wasn't it?
It's changed massively. It has absolutely changed massively. It's been a massive learning bit, and it's great from a practitioner's point of view. I don't think the orthodox world appreciates this at all, of how much science is used in integrative medicine, of how much analysis is used, and how much knowledge there is. I did quite a few, quite a lot of training of nutrition practitioners, and I sort of sit there in awe of them, thinking, God, you get, you know, the detail, the degrees that are coming out, you know, it's
I agree.
absolutely, you know. And I think if you could just get an oncologist and sit them in the room for half an hour, it'd blow their minds.
Well, I've sat through plenty of.
The level of knowledge these people have.
I agree.
And you know, and yet the general view is, oh, you're all a bunch of charlatans, you're all just taking money off people, you don't know what you're doing. But things that have changed so much, you know. On one hand, you've got analysis of certain tumor markers. There's all good scientific evidence behind all of this. Things like P53 measurement, which is your first line of your immune system, measuring that hasn't yet come into being in the health service, because they take as long to get through analyzing tumor markers as they do analyzing drugs, etc. And but we can use things like P53 surviving to give an idea. Telomerase measurements, there's loads of evidence that that's a very effective marker of how active cancer cells are, circulating cancer cell count. I first came across some of these some years ago, and I was extremely wary about them, and not at all happy that, you know, they were a scientifically satisfactory method of doing it. And again, in the rest of the world, these are being used. There's evidence to support their use. And hormone methylation is another massive area. You know what's so interesting, Robin? About 80%, probably more, of people I speak to are very healthy. They got very healthy, you know, pretty healthy lifestyles, pretty decent diets, and, you know, I spend usually about 20 minutes of the consultation is angst about what, you know, how they ended up in this
How on
situation.
earth did I get cancer?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the press is giving us a lot of, you know, diet, alcohol, obesity, all this kind of stuff, and then the person who actually doesn't tick any of those boxes suddenly finds themselves diagnosed. It's a horrible situation to be, because they're going, well, I didn't do that, you know, that's not me at all. I haven't caused this. And actually, it's a lot more complicated than that. In some respects, I do agree the messages they're giving out, but they're almost making it all sound so simplistic. And cancer is a complicated disease.
Very.
And there's two things really with getting cancer. We know what happens to the body. We know we have a very toxic life. Definitely. You know, I look at my parents' lifestyle. They grew up in Ireland on farms, and in a very simple way. And my lifestyle is so different to theirs, in terms of both access to fresh, you know, fresh foods and toxins, lack of stress, chemicals everywhere. In one generation, we've changed our environment so much. And I think, you know, my personal views, I think cancer, a large part of it is we haven't had time to evolve fast enough. I think life in the world has changed too quickly. And it's interesting when you look at, when you start to look at underlying causes, with hormonal cancers, and methylation and detoxification is the way the body deals with all these things. Its ability to break them down, to make them available to the kidneys, to the bowel, to get rid of them, so the load is excreted. And that is where the problem lies for a lot of people, is it's not what's happening to them, but cumulatively, if they're not getting rid of what's there, basically you know, the
It builds
disposal
up.
systems are not working properly for whatever reasons, and stress plays a large part in that. then you build up this perfect storm for each individual. I'll give you an example.
Yeah, go on.
I'll give you an example of that. I saw a lady in London recently, lovely French lady, and she's had breast cancer, early breast cancer. Everything's okay. She looks relatively okay, and she obviously wants to find out what's going on. We did hormone methylation testing on her. And one of the interesting things about her was she looks okay, she feels okay. She's losing lots and lots of weight and doesn't have as much energy as she could for somebody who doesn't have, she doesn't have cancer at the moment, or that we, you know. And when we did the methylation testing, her methylation pathways were absolutely dreadful, completely dreadful. And of course, what was happening, her body's gone into a catabolic breakdown. So, and she's now rectifying that, she's getting better.
So a catabolic breakdown, just to make sure everybody understands it, is where it starts using up its own resources, really, to...
It does when it's cachexia, when it's the protein catabolism. But in this case, and this is what's interesting, is because if she hadn't taken this step, she wouldn't know this. In the body, is the thing with cancer, it's all about balance. And the body has a catabolic-anabolic balance. Anabolism is the rebuilding of cells and the healing side of the body. Catabolism is the breaking down of cells and the taking away of cells. And we need both of those things to happen. And what often happens with cancer, and I think, because, I mean, you look at chemotherapy, what a catabolic process that is.
Right.
Massively, you know, it's the body cells are just breaking down at a ridiculous rate of knots. That's the thing. I think chemoradiotherapy can perpetuate a catabolic response in the body. That if that is not put back into balance, then the potential for Groundhog Day is, you know, and for the same thing happening all over again is very, very high. And I had another lady, she's had breast cancer a couple of times, stage 4. She did a really good program with a chemo, thank goodness. And a lot of things will help chemotherapy work well. You know, the reduce the inflammation, because inflammation guards cancer cells against chemo and radiotherapy. So the thing about antioxidants stopping chemotherapy working is completely nonsense. That's completely false. It's wrong. And a lot of things, they reduce inflammation, they'll allow the cancer cells to be more vulnerable. And she had a complete metabolic response with stage 4 to chemotherapy, which is fantastic. When she started the analysis of looking into it, her glutathione pathway is completely deleted. It's gone. And that's the main detoxification channel in the body. You know, but we can support that. You know, we could, you know, I'm not saying we're going to cure her, but it's going to massively reduce the chance of, you know, it's going to normalize the body significantly. And she's doing great. So, you know, it really is. It's very scientific. It's very interesting. And it's giving people the tools that they need.
Okay. So in terms of things that have advanced in the way that integrative medicine, such as it is in this country, exists in the last sort of 5 years, what do you think are the things that have come on the most?
Well, as we say, the analysis has come on the most. The amount of research that's been done on the various elements that you can use, and it's, you know, I say it's different for everybody, and people can build very effective programs that suit their lifestyle and their budget. It doesn't have to be massive. The things that have come on the most, and some of the things are getting pushed aside a little as well. You know, we're now learning, I think, in my opinion, that vitamin C is not as good as everybody thought it was. And that's the nature of medicine. It evolves. Doctors need to understand that as well, that when we're talking about things, we're doing it in the balance of, yes, we're using the best possible information we've got. It may change in the future.
Yes.
It's the same with drugs.
Yes.
You know, it's no different. You know, we shouldn't be criticised if something's applauded and then turns out to be not as good. It's a process. The area that's really making a big difference, one is CBD or cannabis oil.
Mm-hmm.
The research on that. Now, this is really interesting. The research on cannabis oil has been around for years. The use of the cannabinoid pathways, I remember seeing studies and scientific research done on cannabinoid pathways for years that it can affect cancer and affect the immune system and cancer cell growth, etc. Never been exploited, due to difficulty with patenting by drug companies and the slightly difficult ethical elements of using cannabis oil, etc. that has changed at a rate of knots, and it's gathering pace and it's gathering interest around the world from everybody, which is fantastic.
Good.
I think the evidence is so strong it can't be ignored. And I remember reading the research years ago that, you know, the cannabinoid pathways are there to be exploited, not something that anybody could do anything with. And of course, what's happened with that is that people informally have been exploiting the cannabinoid pathways. There are now quite a lot of legal products containing cannabis oil with a small degree of the THC, which is a more active form, which a lot of people are using to support themselves with. And the NHS has obviously it's become legal to use it for MS, and they're putting it into clinical study for relieving the side effects of chemotherapy. So, and late stage cancers, there's a lot of support can be had from CBD oil with the lower level of THC. And of course, there's a drug company now in America that has produced the synthetic version, which is they patented.
Of course.
So that's coming on the market as well. And we also know, of course, realistically, that people are using higher THC levels. And we hear about it, and we hear stories about that, and et cetera. And I've seen one or two people come to me and they said that, you know, they have been doing that. And the response to that seems to be extremely good.
Hmm.
You know, it seems to be playing quite a supportive role in helping get them over cancer. Now, there's elements there too that obviously it's the right thing at the right time. People need to know that if something like that can cause problems psychologically from the effects it has. But there are things that will stop the more psychotic elements of that. So they can, you know, that can be combined in support. And also for some people, I've heard people sort of saying, you know, it makes them very lethargic. And of course, lethargy is the last thing you want. When you're trying to do an integrated program, we're all yes. about getting people oxygenized and energized. So it's then people finding the right level and finding how to do things.
Hmm. So the drug that's being produced, is that something that's going to be available in this country anytime soon, the American drug? And is it as effective as the oil?
It's very, very early in its development. You know, it's a drug. It's right. gone in the process.
I God see.
Knows how it is. Yeah. I do actually know someone who's got it. But it's too early for me to say what, you know, how well it's going to work. So the jury's certainly out, the jury's out on that one at the moment.
Okay.
Obviously, we hope so.
But in terms of the oil, who's it helping and in what way? I mean, who's it relevant to?
The CBD, it's very relevant to anybody who's having chemotherapy, and it's very relevant to people who are doing a wider supportive program. You know, any program's bigger than some of its parts, so it's gonna play a role in most people's programs in bringing an anti-cancer element to it. And certainly in later stages of cancer, if people have late stage cancers and they have symptoms of nausea, vomiting, feeling unwell, etc., it seems to be something that relieves quite a lot of those symptoms. The NHS has put it into clinical study in 3 hospitals for relieving okay. the side effects of late stage cancer. So, mm-hmm. you know, both sides are looking at it very, very, very interestingly indeed.
Good, good.
It's all, you know, the informal side is, as usual, a bit messy, etc. But people, you know, their viewpoint is it's great that the orthodox world is taking an interest, and it's great that they're actually looking at it in studies and are agreeing to formalise something, but that, you know, they haven't got 5 years to wait. They haven't got 10 years.
So they're quite busy brazenly breaking the law, actually. Most of them have newspaper articles saying, yep, I'm doing it, I'm breaking the law, I don't care, I'm going to die. So
yeah, they are. And obviously that's not something that we can advocate.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I knew about this for a long time, and I knew about the pathways for a long time, but it wasn't until I had a lady who I'd been looking after with cachexia. I hadn't seen her for about 6 months, and she had widespread peritoneal cancer, lungs, liver, all over the peritoneum, etc. And she came to see me again and came in, and she went, I looked at her and I thought, well, you look damn good. And she was in complete remission.
Mm.
complete remission. Nothing to do with me, I might add.
Right.
I'd love to claim that one, but no. It's not one of mine. And she'd done it with cannabis oil. And I thought, well, you know.
Hmm. Well, I haven't heard of anybody being prosecuted, actually, for doing it either. But I don't know if you have. But
Not yet. I'm not yet, but give me time.
Right. Okay, well, look, talking about sort of new things on the block, as we were at the beginning, the thing that's quite in the news now is this repurposing of old out-of-patent drugs for a different purpose.
Terrific.
Okay, so let's talk about that a bit, because I had a whole show talking to a lady about this who has done it herself and is promoting the trial that's currently going on, and it sounds very interesting, particularly as it uses pharmaceutical drugs in a completely different way. It seems to be not wildly full of horrible side effects, and by targeting similar pathways basically to integrative medicine, they seem to be onto something. So yeah, tell me a bit more about it.
Right, well, this one, and we'll talk about LDN later, that's a separate thing, it's not part of this
okay,
study.
Yes.
This what's been done at the Care Clinic in London is great. It's very exciting. It's integrative and it's working, so we have no problems with this at all. What it is,
right,
is essentially what they've done is they're looking at cancer from a metabolic point of view. Hooray, hallelujah, somebody's doing that, and mirroring what we've been trying to do in complementary medicine, which is look at the metabolics of cancer and interrupt metabolic pathways, interrupt the way that cancer can proliferate.
So just to be absolutely clear so everybody understands, so when you say metabolic, exactly what do you mean by that, and how does it contrast with orthodox medicine?
Right, good point. Yep. Orthodox medicine has done several things. Classically, it's tried to kill cancer cells dead,
mm-hmm,
outright by poisoning them or radiating them and damage their DNA. Then they tried gene therapy, which didn't work very well because the genetic setup of each individual cancer, never mind the cancer types, is so massively different. It didn't work. Then it's trying targeted therapies with some success. I mean, you know, Herceptin's been a big success, and cetuximab, etc., is getting better elements. But with the targeted pathways, it's a bit like putting a roadblock up on the motorway. No matter how many cars you trap there, they're all going to find their way out and go off down another route eventually, no matter how long the police will keep you there.
Right.
And that's essentially what they've done. They, although there's been studies looking at it, they've never really looked at, okay, what does the cancer cell use for its fuel source? How does it use oxygen? How does it use inflammation to protect itself? You know, what is the cancer's environment? What does it do within the body? So, which is a kind of slightly simpler approach, really. And what they've done at the Care Clinic, another Robin actually is the main sort of instigator of this. Something about you Robins, aren't they?
Must be.
About half a dozen Batman jokes came through my head.
You must no, no, no,
no. I'm not even going there. And this wonderful, wonderful chap. The scientist, and his wife has breast cancer, and she'd had chemotherapy and it came back, and she says, you know, I'm just not doing that anymore, that's not the road I want, I don't want to go on having chemotherapy damaging my body. And you know, we know that for metastatic breast cancer, you know, ultimately it's going to fail. So he started to look at what else could he do against cancer. And he started to look at old drugs that are in use for other things, all that have evidence of being used against cancer. And there you get the delightful paradox that they run into the same problems that we do. That I can look at Boswellia, curcumin, grapeseed extract, all these things, and produce a big pile of small studies that says that these things have anti-cancer properties in one way or another, in whichever way they work. And they did that. They looked at different drugs like metformin, like statins, an antifungal drug, an antibiotic. And all these things have studies, all small studies that say they've got anti-cancer properties in one way or another, all working in different ways. And of course, that doesn't add up to equating to what an oncologist has on offer, because the oncologist got the big randomized double-blind trial. So always with anything other than what the drug companies are putting on the table, you get the there's not sufficient evidence. It doesn't match the gold standard of the randomized double-blind trial. Well, you know, we could argue about randomized double-blind trials and are they a load of rubbish anyway for about 3 hours, but I'm not going to bore you with that. Okay. But I can if you like.
No, we haven't got time.
No, we've got empirical evidence. We've gone away from this. Okay, there's enough evidence here to sort of say this is a good idea. And this is what complementary medicine has done, is sort of say, look, there's a certain amount of evidence. This is not harmful. This seems like a good approach. And they've done the same thing, and they put together, and they vary it slightly, combinations of four, maybe five different drugs for people. And what those different drugs are doing is coming at cancer from completely different ways. So we know cancer metabolizes glucose, those people who are sat in the oncology clinic eating the Mars bars that they're given. We know that that's a fact. So metformin lowers blood sugar. Statins, I mean, you know, none of us would advocate statins in normal circumstances, but when you're dealing with cancer, statins have quite a lot of anti-cancer properties. And they've been doing this for about 18 months and putting this together and treating people like this. And to my view, always, to be successful against cancer, you come at it from all sorts of different tangents. It's got to be bigger than some of its parts. You don't let up on it. And I must say, I've had meetings with them and referring a lot of people to them now, and the results are great.
Right.
The results are really good, and the side effect profile is very, very low indeed. Mm. And interestingly, what they're finding is that, for example, for people on hormone therapy for breast cancer, the hormone therapy is working better, and chemotherapy seems to be working better if they're able to take chemotherapy and all the different drugs. So, which, you know, has always been the case with complementary medicine, but we can never prove that. You know, right. if someone's on an integrative program and they do well against the cancer with chemotherapy, the chemo gets all the credit. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
I've even got clients who've got themselves into full remission themselves and the oncologist is still taking the credit. But we can come at cancer from so many different tangents and don't give it a chance, you are going to do better. It makes perfect sense.
Mm. Right. And of course, an interesting point about what they're doing at Care Oncology is it's not cancer specific, is it? It's a type of cancer.
Not at all, as complementary medicine isn't either. The old cancer specific element of picking out chemotherapies, that's proved to be quite flawed.
Mm.
You know, that really has. And yes, we, you know, obviously, if someone's got a breast cancer, you want to be addressing the hormonal side of it. Or if they've got a bladder cancer, you're going to be looking at a viral implication. You know, you're going to look at the underlying implications are certainly there.
Right.
But it's not cancer specific. It seems to work right across the board.
Right. So that's a very, very different model to orthodox medicine, which has been moving in the direction of not just you're not just looking at different types of cancer, you're looking at the subtypes. How many different types of breast cancer are there? There are dozens 26. Of them, aren't there? Yeah. 26. Yeah. And of course, then dreaming up a treatment for each of those. And it's a great marketing model for making money, but not good at all for finding solutions for people.
Well, this is it. You know, it's like in orthodox medicine, a new drug comes on the market and, it's being successful against the type of cancers. Well, can I have that? No, because they've got to now go away and do the studies for that and that. And the whole process takes 20 years, And, it just goes on and on. But I was surprised at how successful the Care Clinic has been.
Mm.
You know, I wasn't expecting to hear of that level. I mean, telazolamide, for example, I hope they don't mind me quoting some of the figures they gave me, but telazolamide is a chemotherapy used for brain tumors.
Mm-hmm.
And, has a degree of success. Like, you know, most drugs, if you can get a 30-40% response rate out of a drug, it's normally pretty good by orthodox standards.
Hmm.
There's a lot of people having drugs that only work a little bit or don't work at all. And with telazolamide, they're getting a 95% response rate.
By doing the drugs at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Interesting.
And also, you know, for people who, a lot of people I'm sending there, you know, who are, cancers come back, the response rate that they're being quoted for their chemotherapy has dropped from the sort of 40% to you know, about 23% potential response rate, you know, you've got a 70% chance of having a course of treatment that's going to be debilitating and doesn't work very well. Yep. You know, this has potentially got a better chance of working. It's hellishly a lot cheaper and isn't going to cause you, you know, anything like the problems. And of course, you can work with that. The, you know, the big problem with the orthodox treatment is we can't work with it. You know, for somebody who's been, you know, diagnosed with cancer, the look at all the stuff we ramble on about endlessly, about healing, about oxygenating, about stress, about the mind-body side. And then you go and have a course of chemotherapy, which makes you ill and drops your energies and depletes you and, you know, makes you feel helpless and hopeless. It ties your hands behind your back. So, you know, I think the great thing you say about complementary medicine or integrated medicine, I should say, is really it gives you something to work with. It gives you the power to do something.
Yeah, it puts you in control, at least to some extent. Yeah. Great. All right. Well, look, do you know whether the care clinic's going to publish anything about their results at all at any point? Are we expecting that?
Oh, they will be doing. They will be doing. The other thing about the cost as well is people worth knowing about. There is an upfront consultation fee, but ongoing, the cost of the drugs per quarter, every 3 months, £59.
That is not a lot by cancer treatment standards.
Not a lot.
You can't beat that.
I think most of us agree. And in the later stages, in particular, you know, they're getting better results in chemotherapy.
Great.
You know, this could potentially, and of course, it's got some of the top oncologists in London involved with it. So great thing is, no one can shoot this down like they can us.
No, it's a game changer because it's using orthodox drugs from a pharmaceutical, so that you can't question those, and of course it's also a game changer because it doesn't even make sense within a kind of genetic view of cancer. It only makes sense in a metabolic view of cancer.
Absolutely. You know, you present any of these, and I know oncologists are still struggling with this concept when they get it presented to them, that, you know, you're going to use a statin against cancer and a few other old drugs, because they haven't been trained to look at cancer from that perspective. So, you know, if they carry on getting the responses that they are, and when the studies are published, then, it's going to be a difficult one to ignore.
Yeah. And of course, once the metabolic view of cancer is established in any way, then actually the kind of things that people have been doing in integrative medicine also then get some status as making complete sense.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it should push this a long way along the roads of this becoming a more mainstream normal idea. Then everyone will pinch it off us and then run away with it, and that'd be great. But yeah. It's bizarre, isn't it, that despite everything that goes on, the medical profession does not have a uniform response to the work that goes on in integrative medicine. And the reason for that, you know, you'll always get some people, or, you know, you'll get some oncologists and doctors who probably know people who've gone into sort of alternative medicine, as it were, and perhaps spent an awful lot of money, had a horrible experience, and it's not worked. And that colours their view, and that's an enormous shame.
Yes.
That's the only view that they get, because it misses the point altogether of what's taking place. And, you know, other doctors, you know, I had in the last fortnight, I had one doctor, one oncologist who was a young man who got lung metastases, and I'd only done a consultation, I hadn't even sent him any information. They mentioned to his oncologist, and he went berserk and said, "Don't speak to these people, they just want to, you know,
rip you off
and get money out of you and all that." And they did point out that they hadn't actually paid for it at all, and it was free, but they still, you know, that didn't make any difference whatsoever. Another oncologist who was really impressed with the work I'd done with somebody who wanted to speak to me, you know. So it's very bizarre, this, that the medical profession, I think, you know, never mind, you know, throwing the ball in our court, they ought to try getting their act together a bit.
Well, it's a period of change. I mean, you know, it's going to be a big change to go from what's been happening to include this new sort of metabolic way of looking at cancer. And so inevitably, I suppose, we're going to go through a lumpy period.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, well, I think that's about all we got time for today, and it's great you come on the show, and we've been working with you, Yes to Life, for quite a few years now, 7 or 8, but you've been at it out there for 15 or 16 years, I think, as Cancer Options, and yes, yeah. I think so, offering a kind of unique service to everybody, so a fantastic resource for people, and I think considering the sort of the dearth of, you know, there's so little in the way of integrative medicine in the UK, it's been great to have you there to help direct things. So fantastic work you've done for us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining me this week. I hope you found it interesting and useful. As usual, links to people and clinics mentioned in the show will be posted on the Yes to Life website. Go to yestolife.org.uk, that's yestolife.org.uk, and click the link to radio in the left-hand sidebar. UK Health Radio has a new edition of its online magazine Health Triangle out, in which the show has a dedicated section with additional material from my guests, so do check it out. If you have any comments or suggestions for the show, please email me at radio@yestolife.org.uk. Do join me again next week when I'll be talking to Mike Jefferson, a dynamic young exercise professional who's successfully integrating an extensive lifestyle program into NHS services. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.